Hello, I'm Eric Corman, Communications Director at League of Education Voters. In this podcast, we interview policymakers, partners, and thought leaders to spotlight educational policies, research, and practices so that together we can create a brighter future for every Washington student. Randy Spaulding is Executive Director of the Washington State Board of Education, joining SPE in 2018. Previously, he had served as the Director of Academic Affairs and Policy at the Washington Student Achievement Council, WASAC, and Higher Education Coordinating Board, HECB. His work focused on the intersections of secondary and post-secondary education to improve student transitions and raise educational attainment. At WASAC, Randy also led the development, in collaboration with a broad range of stakeholders and partner agencies, of the state's first ongoing comprehensive assessment of state and regional student, economic, and community needs for post-secondary education. Prior to his work at the Council, HECB, Randy worked in student services, admissions, and financial aid at the University of Washington, Bothell. Randy received his PhD from the University of Washington in 2003. His research and policy work have been focused on issues of equity and human capital development. Randy is also an affiliate faculty member at University of Washington, Bothell, supporting the students in the legislative intern program. Randy, what exactly does the State Board of Education do? And how is it different from the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction?
Well, thank you. So the State Board of Education is a policymaking board. We have a narrower set of responsibilities than the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction. Mm-hmm. And I think probably helps to start with who the board is. So the board is made up of 16 members, either elected or appointed by the governor. That includes two student members. And so it allows us to have sort of this broad range of voices that help influence education policy. We have several different responsibilities. The one people are most familiar with is the board sets the state's high school graduation requirements, mm-hmm. but we also have responsibilities within our accountability system and recognition of schools, as well as a role with private schools and a role with the charter schools that operate in the state. And most of that, again, is at the policy level, and then the Office of the Superintendent's role is more around implementation, although they have certain areas where policy is critical for their work as well.
Is the reason why you work with the public schools, the charter schools, and private schools is so that the graduation standards are consistent across the board in Washington State?
Yeah, the graduation standards apply in similar ways to the different sectors. And so the charter schools are public schools, and so they're held to the same graduation standards. Mm-hmm. And the private schools have a little more flexibility in how they apply them, but they need to meet a similar set of standards. The role with privates is really around ensuring that the privates are meeting the requirements in law and authorizing those schools. The charter school is a little more complex kind of relationship. We actually have some reporting responsibilities related to the charter schools, and we authorize school districts that want to authorize charter schools. There's also a charter school commission that has the majority of the responsibility over the charter schools in the state.
So OSPI is more about implementation of the policies that the SBE comes up with. How do you create your policies?
So we have a process where the board ultimately would adopt a policy change. We go through a fairly intensive development process to do that in most cases. And so we just came off our strategic planning process, which was a broad attempt to bring in voices from across the state and a lot of input from public, but also from various education stakeholders, both state level and local policymakers and educators and advocacy organizations were really engaged in it. And we got feedback through surveys and through public meetings from students and from parents as well in that process. And what we wanted to hear was, what are the challenges that students are facing in particular, and how can we make some changes to that? Mm-hmm. So that resulted in our strategic plan, and I think one of the, you know, going back to what's most recognizable in our work is around the high school diploma requirements. And really two things came out of that work that are articulated in the plan, but also in our work since then. One is we've created some communication documents around the high school diploma requirements to reinforce the flexibility that's built into the current policy, because there seems to be a lot of sort of misunderstanding about what the requirements are and how much flexibility schools and districts do or don't have.
And this is the 24 credit requirement?
This is the 24 credit requirement. And so there's a lot of flexibility built into that that can be applied at the local level. And so we wanted to reinforce that. So we've created a suite of communication materials to do that are available on our website.
And in terms of the strategic plan, it focuses on student well-being, learning environments, system design, student transitions and diploma, and funding and accountability. What are you most excited about with that?
Well, I think I'll keep going on diploma requirements because one of the big pieces of work we carved out for ourselves in that space was around mastery-based or competency-based diploma pathway. And so the idea here is to take what we've seen a few examples of in the state of schools where they've really taken an alternative approach to the credit-based and provided interdisciplinary models with lots of problem-based or work-integrated learning opportunities built into that to create a different way to ensure that students are meeting the learning standards that we've established, but not necessarily articulating it back into credits. And so that's creative thinking. It's the kind of thing we want to see happening in our system, and we know that it works really well for certain students, and so we want to find ways to expand that.
It sounds like the challenge there is maintaining rigor, because at League of Education Voters, we want to make sure that every student is prepared for what comes after high school, whatever that might be. So yes, we want to make sure that they are prepared. How do you maintain rigor in a situation like that?
Well, you know, this is where we can learn from other states that have done this. So we won't be the first ones doing this. We can also learn a lot from higher ed. There's been some really good examples in higher education around this. And it really comes down to what are the competencies or that they're measuring against, and how do they assess that? In higher ed, the example that's easiest to point to is you have Western Governors University, who's really done an amazing job serving a lot of students in Washington and grown phenomenally well. And they have a model that is really solid in terms of what are we measuring and how are we measuring it. And so that's the kind of example we could draw from higher ed. We have some K-12 examples where we see this happening too, primarily through the big picture schools in Washington, but nationally there's other examples as well. And so we're looking at those and what can we learn from those schools in terms of how they're meeting students' needs.
Speaking of meetings, you mentioned that you do have meetings with parents and with students, with communities, when you were developing your strategic plan. What did those look like? How did you incorporate the community voice?
Yeah, so we have a couple different ways that we do that. And so we do community forums where we do broad kind of outreach to bring folks to our meetings. And those are really typically designed around a specific question or issue that we're wanting to get input on. Several of them were around the strategic plan, and so they were somewhat broad. In our most recent meeting, we had one that was really focused on early learning, particularly around early learning educators and how they can develop their skills, and that was done in collaboration with the Department of Children, Youth, and Family Services. So we try to, in many cases, have them focused on a problem practice or a specific issue. In other cases, we want more just broad feedback. So that's community forums. We also, Washington State School Directors Association does a set of meetings with board members around the state in the spring and in the fall. And so we go to those meetings regularly, and we use that as a way to kind of hear what's happening in local districts. And that's been a really good opportunity to learn a little bit about what various individual boards are facing or what as a collection they're facing in terms of challenges. Our board members are spread out across the state, and they have a lot of networks where they kind of meet with their local communities and schools and school boards to get additional feedback in that way. So there's a few avenues there. The other thing we did last summer is we did a survey, and we had over 2,500 people respond to the survey with feedback that we incorporated into our planning process.
Moving forward with the plan, how will the state board partner with legislators and the Education Opportunity Gap Accountability and Oversight Committee? It's a lot easier to say the EOGOAC.
Yes.
How do you partner with those stakeholders moving forward?
So that's a great question. And so we've been doing a lot of work with EOGOAC, particularly around the recognition system. And so one of the things that we're tasked with doing is recognizing schools. The legislation specifically calls out EOGOAC and OSPI as folks to collaborate with, but it's really critical we do that regardless of what the legislation says, because these are groups that are really connected to communities in different ways, and it is a way for us to kind of get a different lens on our work. So we've been working very closely at finding a way to reframe how we recognize schools in the past so that it's more equitable, it's recognizing good work happening in a broader range of schools than what we've done in the past. And so that's one example, and we attend regularly to their meetings. And then with legislators, we meet with legislators both during session and outside of session. And of course, working through legislative, we had request bills, and that's one way to communicate. The other is to testify and to work with them on various bills. And so that's been something that we've been doing. We have a legislative platform that kind of lays out the key priorities for the board. I've been talking a lot about diploma, but we also have in that platform language around special education, around equity more broadly, mm-hmm. and funding and a whole host of other issues that are really critical to the board.
Well, let's talk about you, about your own personal educational journey. What did you find worked well, and what didn't work so well when you were going through school?
You know, I reflect on that a lot, actually, because I went to a high school where most of the kids were going to college, and that was always my plan. I never had anything different. But we also had actually fairly good CTE programs, what would be called CTE now. We didn't call it that.
Yeah, career technical education. And right. did you grow up here in Washington State?
No, I grew up in California. And I would say actually one of the things that made a difference is my high school had a 7-period day, which gave me a little more flexibility than some of our schools are able to offer now. So I graduated high school college ready with the math and English requirements, very similar to what we have in our 24-credit framework. Mm-hmm. I was also a certified mechanic, ASE certified, because wow. I had 3 years of auto shop and experience out in the field. So I was able to do both of those things and then go to college with no remediation and move forward fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. My college journey, I actually went to Montana to go to college, mm-hmm. completed a bachelor's and master's there, and then began working in higher education after a little bit of bouncing around in sales and retail.
Yep.
Worked at the University of Washington for 9 years, started in financial aid and student services, and then did my doctoral work, and I had the opportunity to do a little bit of teaching, but mostly it was around student services work there, mm-hmm. prior to moving on to the policy work at HEC Board, which transitioned into WASAC.
Okay, well, what didn't work so well? You know, what do you wish you could have changed when you were a student?
Well, you know, I experienced some of the same things that I think many of the students, in fact, even my own kids, have been concerned about. I wasn't particularly engaged in a lot of the things that were happening at my high school. So the auto shop was what got me up in the morning and I was excited about. Mm-hmm. The other stuff was stuff I just had to do. And so I hear students talking about wanting to have a more engaging experience in school, and it really resonates with me as well. We have a lot of programs that do that, and I think Running Start is a great opportunity for some kids, but also just access to more interesting advanced coursework or CTE-related coursework. It depends on the kid, right? And so for some kids, going to the college courses and having that variety and that pace is a great fit. For others, my son did IB for a year, loved the IB course.
International Baccalaureate.
International Baccalaureate, and those were great, but at the end of the day, he transitioned to Running Start because that was a better fit for him. Mm-hmm. I guess the point is that variety of options for kids is really exciting, and that's kind of what we need, is we need to have those various opportunities. Hear students really struggling with some of the challenges that they have. I think in some cases they have more access to those various options than in others.
So in addition to providing more pathways and different courses that students could take, if you, Randy Spaulding, could design an education system with no restrictions, you could do anything you wanted, what would you do?
It's a tough question because I don't think there's a silver bullet. I think this is where the local decision making and local control becomes a real asset for the system. Mm-hmm. The main thing you'd want to do is to create more opportunities for some flexibility to address local needs in different ways. And so that's one of the reasons I'm really excited about the mastery-based or competency-based education model, mm-hmm. and really creating some opportunities to leverage what's happening locally in a way that's meaningful for the kids and for the communities and that sort of thing. So creating some flexibility, I think a framework is still important. I think state policy is really important, but state policy shouldn't prevent good things from happening at the local level. And so trying to find that balance point, I think, is something that I find personally exciting, but it's also, I think, what we need to try to do in our system.
Randy Spaulding is the executive director of the Washington State Board of Education. Randy, thank you so much for letting me drop by.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And thank you for listening. To learn more about League of Education Voters or to support our work, please visit educationvoters.org.